Hello. Shh. In traditional CCB fashion, we're running a few minutes late, but we are ready to get started. So the first thing on the agenda this evening is a remembrance of those who we've lost since the last CCB convention. So do we have a wireless mic tonight? Do we have a runner or people coming up front? Okay. All right, so if anyone would like to speak, I guess maybe try and make your way up front. I think we have a mic up front here. So I'm sure we have several who will want to speak this evening. Go ahead and please start making your way up front.
Hello. I'm Jacqueline Jackson. I'm the president of the San Diego Braille Club, and last year we lost two members, Marlene Hinton-Silo and Grace Camdoris.
This is Kathy Skybers from Bayview Chapter. We lost Mabel Adams, who was a very long-time member of the Bayview Chapter. And we've lost so many people this year that we love so dearly. But I don't want to be out of order. Is anyone from Capital Chapter remembering my biggest remembrance? Of course, we all miss Ron. It's not your turn, dog. I think that, and you're not from Capital Chapter either, puppy.
You don't know that.
Gene Lozano, do you want to talk about Renda? Is that what he's going to do?
Okay. The ACB Capital Chapter, as you all know, lost one of its greatest members in recent years, and that was Rhonda King. It's also a great loss for the CCB as a whole. I felt honored to have known Rhonda. She was a good friend, a colleague to work on things together, knew her in several capacities within the organization, as well as while she was a student at Sac State. Rhonda, as you all know, was a tireless, hard worker, and with her husband, Lonnie, working on fundraising, the leadership of our chapter at times. And despite times obstacles, she was always optimistic. No, I've never met somebody so optimistic and positive thinking and always encouraging other people, even though you knew that she was in a lot of discomfort and pain there, but she was always trying to encourage people and not focus on herself, but focusing on other things. And so say is that this is one of our leaders that we've lost, and I think we have to keep in mind of her spirit of her thoughts and things there and move ahead with those ideas of dreams that she was hoping for the organization. So thank you.
Hi, my name is Liz Klein. I'm the treasurer of the San Francisco chapter, and I think as everyone in CCB is aware that we lost a very, very fine member this year. She's a member of our chapter, active in the whole chapter and everything, and a wife of Peter Pardini, for Alice Chavez Pardini. We'd like to just recognize her and say that I think everyone here knew her, and she'll be missed in our chapter. Plus, a lot of people maybe not know, but in Alameda chapter, we also lost Rose Harder. I'm not a member of the Alameda chapter, but I've known her since she was 16 years old, and I think she'll be missed by a lot of people, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Mike Keithley. I'm the president of the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind. I wanted to let you know that we lost Ken Pross, who's been a longtime member of the chapter. He was secretary of CCB at one time, and for many years he's been managing the Silicon Valley Blind Center. He was a private person, and we didn't want any representation at his funeral or anything like that. But we should remember him. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. President.
Mr. Chair, if I just a word. And Rhonda would want me to do this right now, because Rhonda was always about fundraising, as many of us noticed. I don't know if there's ever been a better fundraiser in this organization than Rhonda. She would, Kathy told the story at the memorial service about the way that Rhonda would, the waitress would go up to Rhonda's table and Rhonda, the first words out of her mouth, "Hey, I have raffle tickets. Would you like to buy a raffle ticket?" That's the way Rhonda was. But we, our chapter, and I'm really glad that we did, November, October, or something like that, we established a scholarship fund in Rhonda's name for a student in the greater Sacramento metropolitan area. She wanted an emphasis to be, on a student in government studies, but not necessarily that. But government was her passion. And so when we do start giving scholarships away, it's building now. It's getting started. But we'll certainly look for something like that. But anyway, we are inviting any of you who might want to donate to that fund to, you can send your donations to the office or give them to myself or Joni Patchy. And if you wanted to do a check, you could make it out to the Capital Chapter. But it's in her memory, and we think it is. She had such a passion for education, and she was such an inspiration in the fact that she, for many people, and, we like to think, we're also great blind people and all of that, but for many people, blindness really does send them straight down to the bottom. And for Rhonda, it did just the opposite. It sent her to the top. And there aren't many that can really make that claim in the same way that she did. She turned her life around. She got her BA and education. I think other than her family and Lonnie, education was really her passion. And this organization as well, of course. And so we thought it very fitting, and I don't mean to talk so long, we thought it very fitting to do a scholarship for her, and I hope it can continue well into the future.
Okay, I'm Robin from the San Gabriel Valley chapter. Now, any members that are here, if they can correct me, I could be wrong because I'm relatively new. There was a gentleman in our chapter named Mario Engling and Maureen Rousset. She passed away, I don't know if it was last year or this year. I can't really remember exactly, but I didn't know them very well. Maureen had a British accent, and that's what really... where I got to speak with her when I would go to the meetings. And she's sorely missed, but she'd been really sickly, but she kept on. And I apologize if I'm incorrect about the times.
Thank you. We have several people that we're going to be missing. Oh, okay.
Hello.
One more here.
One more person that I thought of and that was a, I understand, was a wonderful Braille teacher, was Pat Burns, Alameda County chapter. And I'm sort of an absentee member now of Alameda County chapter, but just wanted to mention her, that she did also pass away this year.
Okay, anyone else? Is there anyone else?
So I believe we've lost Marion Fisher during this past period. Was it? I lose track of time, so I'm not sure. But anyway, I served on the board with him, and we remember him, and his wife edited the Blaine Californian for a while, I believe, Doris.
We are pleased to say, Roger, thank you for bringing that up. I totally forgot. And we are pleased to say that, I don't know if she's here, but she may be here sometime this weekend. Doris is doing very well.
She is here.
Good. And she is a chapter member, and we are thrilled to have her. So it's great. In Capital Chapter.
I'm Donna Sanchez from the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind. We've also lost Barbara Rhodes. It wasn't this year. I believe it was last year, or it was October.
Okay. Is there anyone else? All right. Thank you, everyone. A lot of people that are going to be missed in this organization, so thank you, everyone, for those remembrances. All right, I guess we're ready to move on to our next agenda item, which is a Colon and Breast Cancer Update 2009. Here to present on that to us is Dr. Stacy DeAndre, the Medical Director for Gastrointestinal and Gynecologic Tumor Programs at Sutter Cancer Center here in Sacramento. And Dr., I hope I get this right, Nitin Rohaki, who is the Medical Director of the Breast Cancer Program, also here at Sutter Medical Center in Sacramento. Dr. DeAndre has several medical degrees and fellowships from the Mayo Clinic, resident at the internal medicine at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, degree from the University of Davis here in California. Dr. Rohaki has several degrees from business school in Scotland, medical education at All India. Both of them have much experience and much to share with us. So without further ado, I would like to turn it over to our presenters for this topic.
Hi, my name is Stacy DeAndre, and thanks for having us here tonight. And what we thought we would do is just go over a brief synopsis of colon cancer for maybe about 15 minutes, and then we'll move on to breast cancer, and then we thought we would open it up for any discussion or questions that you all may have. So my specialty is gastrointestinal cancers, and I also do gynecologic cancers at Sutter. And thought I'd talk a little bit about colon cancer. March has passed, but March is the annual Colon Cancer Awareness Month, so there's been a lot of activity in this month trying to raise awareness about colon cancer and ways that we can prevent it, because prevention is key when we're talking about colon cancer. In terms of the epidemiology of colon cancer, it is the third most common cancer in men and women in this country. The rates of colorectal cancer are about 150,000 Americans per year are diagnosed, and approximately 50,000 deaths per year. The lifetime risk of colon cancer is about 1 in 19. The average age of patients is generally around 65. We see that 90% of these cancers are diagnosed in people over the age of 50. And that's why we think it's important to start your screening procedures at the age of 50. It's a little more common in men than in women. Actually, over the last decade or so, we've been seeing a decrease in the overall death rates from colon cancer, which is a good thing. And I think that that is due to both early discovery of cancer by screening programs, as well as improvements in our treatment and our chemotherapy. So we'll talk a little more about that in a few minutes. So what are some of the risk factors for developing colon cancer? Well, age is probably one of the most important factors. As I said before, most patients are over the age of 50, and the average, again, is about around 65. If you have a family history of colon cancer, that's a very important risk factor, and we know that that increases the risk of colon cancer in relatives. And it's important if you have a family history to talk to your doctor about getting screened, either with a colonoscopy or some other kind of test, if you have a family history. Also, there are some conditions such as inflammatory bowel diseases, things like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. Those people have a lot of inflammation, and they're a little more risk for developing colon cancer as well. There are also some purely genetic syndromes that develop in people, and those represent only about 5 to 10% of cases. And those are truly inherited conditions, and such as Lynch syndrome and some very rare types of inherited syndromes. Some of the less studied, but we still think they're important risk factors for colon cancer, include dietary factors such as red meat. It does seem to pan out in many studies that red meat does confer an increased risk of colon cancer. Also, diets that are high in fat and low in fiber tend to confer an increased risk. There also is an increased risk in patients with diabetes, and also those who are smokers and drink a lot of alcohol. So those do actually play a small role in the development of colon cancer. and lack of exercise. So a lot of this is common sense in terms of just healthy living choices, but these things do tend to predispose to colon cancer. So in terms of screening tests for colon cancer, there are a number of tests that can be done, and I think it's the most important thing is to get something done and to talk with your doctor about what test may be right for you. The gold standard or the best test is probably a full colonoscopy, and that test is when the gastroenterologist or the gut doctor, as we call them, they actually sedate you. Don't tell them I said that. They'll get mad at me. So they sedate you, and they actually take a camera, a scope, and look up your bottom, and they look at the entire colon. It's really the only test that directly visualizes the entire colon. And if there's something found, like a polyp is a growth in the colon that can be precancerous. 95% of cancers actually start from a polyp. So if we can remove that little polyp, we can remove the risk and the development of a colon cancer. So colonoscopy is the best test. There's also a test called flexible sigmoidoscopy, and that is a shorter tube. They often will just do this in the office, and they don't always sedate you, so it actually turns out to be not quite as pleasant. They do not get a look at the whole colon. They only look at part of it, so it's really a not as good of a test. There's a new test coming, and we're waiting to hear if Medicare is going to actually pay for this test, and we're kind of excited about it, and I hope that it's paid for. It's called a virtual colonoscopy. And what that is, it's actually a CAT scan. It's pretty fancy, and they do this three-dimensional reconstruction, and the doctor just watches endless reels of colon on this video screen, and it's reconstructed. It's actually pretty neat. And so you get a look at the inside of the colon. So people say, well, why can't we just do a CAT scan? Well, a CAT scan just doesn't get a look inside the colon. The colon is not open all the time. It's a mobile organ, and so it doesn't get a good enough look at the inside of the colon. Whereas the virtual colonoscopy, they do inflate some air, and then they take a lot of pictures, and they do a reconstruction. So it does. All of these tests require a prep. So you have to take a drink the night before, kind of like a colon cleanse, which is what I hear is the worst part about the whole process. So I see that people have had this done. That's good. I'm glad people are getting their screening done. So, yeah, it's not pleasant, but it's really important because then we get a good look at things. And so, but that's the worst part about it. And, you know, we're trying to spread the word that a little bit of prevention really goes a long way. Most of the people that I see that have colon cancer in my clinic, they've never had a screening test. I would say that's pretty much the rule. So it's a preventable cancer, one of the most preventable cancers. So, if you do have a family history of colon cancer and a very strong family history, especially if people are young, so if members of the family, you know, they get colon cancer when they're 40 or even 50, the risk is increased in the children and the brothers and sisters. And so we do recommend that the colonoscopy is done approximately 10 years before that patient is diagnosed. So that's important to discuss with your physician. I don't think that's a common thing that people know about. But family history is a very strong risk factor for colon cancer. And also, if you do have any kind of diseases, such as Crohn's or inflammatory bowel disease, you need to be screened a lot more frequently because the rate of cancer development is actually a lot higher and it tends to come on quicker. So those are things that are important to talk about with your doctor. So a few words about the diagnosis and the treatment of colon cancer. So what are some of the common symptoms? Well, colon cancer can present in a number of different ways. Most commonly, patients will have some kind of change in their bowel habits. Maybe they'll be constipated, maybe they'll have diarrhea, maybe they'll have bleeding. So something going wrong with the colon. Also, you can have abdominal cramping or bloating is a common symptom, which is kind of nonspecific, but something that persists over time. Also, if somebody is anemic, if you're low on your red blood cells, and you're iron deficient, if the doctor checks you and finds you're iron deficient, you always need to ask the question, why am I iron deficient? Don't just take iron. Say, why am I iron deficient? Because it's often that chronic blood loss from a cancer leads to iron deficiency anemia, especially in men. So any man who is iron deficient needs a colonoscopy, especially if they're over the age of 50 to 60. So those are some of the common symptoms of colon cancer. Now, if somebody is actually found to have a colon cancer, typically they have a colonoscopy and a mass is found and we do a biopsy to confirm that. And then they go on to have other tests such as CAT scans and other things to make sure that it hasn't spread. And the treatment of the initial treatment is generally surgical. So we call our surgical colleagues in and have them do a resection. And we want them to remove the tumor. And we also want them to remove the lymph nodes that surround the tumor. And then we get that information. We're able to tell the patient what stage they are, 1 through 4. 1 is very early colon cancer, where it is just very limited to the bowel. Stage 2 is when it's a little bit bigger tumor but has not spread into the lymph nodes. Stage 3 is when it has actually spread into the lymph nodes, and then you're starting to talk about a higher risk type of tumor. And then stage 4 is when it's spread to other organs. And colon cancer likes to spread to the liver and to the lungs. Those are the two favorite places. So that is the initial treatment is surgery. And if people have high-risk disease, then we often do give chemotherapy after surgery to try to prevent the cancer from coming back. The chemotherapy isn't great, but it's getting better, and we have more and more new agents. In the last 10 years, we've had 3 new drugs approved for colon cancer, actually 4, which is similar. 2 of them are very similar. And so the number of medications that we have is translating into improving the survival of many, many patients, and that's why the death rates are decreasing over time. We used to only have 1 drug to treat people whose cancer had spread, and the average survival used to be only 6 months, you know, and that was only 15 years ago. So we've come a long way in the treatment, and now the average survival for patients whose cancer has actually spread is over 2 years. So we're making progress. It's not great, but we're doing a lot of research, and good things are happening. There are a lot of new drugs that are being tested. So that's generally how we treat patients. It depends on what stage you're at, and the treatment is individualized to each patient at that point. So that's kind of the rundown, colon cancer 101, for where we're at in 2009. So I'll go ahead and hand it over to Dr. Rahaki, and he'll talk about breast cancer, and then we'll do a question and answer session.
Hi, I'm Nitin Rahaki. I'm the medical director of the breast cancer program at Sutter. So breast cancer is a very common disease. 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer in their lifetime. The American Cancer Society estimates that 240,000 to 250,000 women will get breast cancer this year. About a quarter of those are precancerous, what we call ductal carcinoma in situ, which is the precursor to actual breast cancer. The incidence of breast cancer goes up with age. There is a misconception that breast cancer is a disease of young women, which it's not. The risk increases with each decade as you get older. The risk is highest in your 70s. The average age at diagnosis of breast cancer now is 62, so half of women are below that and half above that when they're diagnosed. As the population ages, the frequency of breast cancer is going to increase because age is a major risk factor. It's estimated that in the next 5 to 6 years, there will be about 290,000 cases of breast cancer a year, just in this country alone. So this is an increasing problem. The risk factors for breast cancer are pretty much the same as they've always been. There's not been a whole lot new. We know that there are some reproductive risk factors. Of course, the biggest risk factor for breast cancer is being a woman, since only about 1% of all breast cancer occurs in men. Other than that, age is a big risk factor. As you get older, the risk increases. Exposure to hormones is a risk factor after menopause. And so in the 90s, it was fashionable to take hormones after menopause for hot flashes and for other benefits. Around 2000, a couple of studies came out that showed that hormone replacement after menopause doesn't reduce the risk of heart attacks or strokes or anything, but does increase the risk of breast cancer severalfold. At that time, a lot of women stopped taking hormone replacement therapy, and the incidence of breast cancer adjusted for age has actually decreased over time because of that. Family history is a risk factor for breast cancer, but it's a small risk factor because only 5 to 10% of all breast cancers are inherited. The vast majority of breast cancer, 90 to 95% of it, is just random. Alcohol has been in the news recently. There was a recent study published from the UK looking at alcohol consumption and increased risk of cancer. In that study, women or individuals who drank more than 2 alcoholic beverages a week had an increased risk of cancer. The cancer that was most frequent in people who consumed more alcohol than that was breast cancer. The risk was about 11 times greater than people who consumed less than that. There are reproductive risk factors as well, early age at starting to menstruate, later age at stopping menstruation, not having pregnancies or delaying pregnancy are risk factors. Breastfeeding is protective against breast cancer. There is some controversy regarding the role of vitamin D. There have been some studies showing that women who have the lowest levels of vitamin D in their blood have the highest levels of breast cancer, have the highest risk of breast cancer. But that's somewhat controversial. It's never been shown that replacing vitamin D actually reduces the risk of breast cancer. But that's an area that's being investigated at present. In terms of screening, the traditional screening tool is the mammogram, which has undergone some improvements in that we now have digital mammograms, which are a little more accurate, more sensitive, and we have what's called a computer-aided detection, or CAD, which uses computer software to take a second look at the mammogram above and beyond the radiologist himself. So then there are two looks at the mammogram, one by the computer software, one by the radiologist, and that increases the sensitivity but also lowers the specificity so that more women are called back. The nationwide, the average callback rate on mammograms is about 10 to 12%, which is higher than it is in Europe. But so it's essentially about 1 in 10 women who have a mammogram will be called back for further views because of something that looks abnormal. Many times the callback mammogram, which is additional views, will turn out to be fine or not suspicious for anything. If anything suspicious shows up, then an ultrasound is done and a biopsy is recommended. The vast majority of breast cancer that is diagnosed today is detected on mammogram, is not palpated or felt by either the physician or the patient. And that's one of the reasons why the cure rate with breast cancer is so high. There is some data from a recent study presented last year looking at whether all mammographically detected breast cancer is significant. That study was retrospective, but did suggest that some breast cancers may resolve spontaneously over time. But that study has not been replicated yet. There are some additional breast cancer screening tools. One is an MRI, which is even more sensitive than mammogram. About 10 or 15% of all breast cancers don't show up on mammogram. And for them, MRI is more sensitive. The problem, though, with MRI is it's not very specific, and so that a lot of the things that show up on MRI and require biopsy turn out to be nothing. So only about 1 in 4 things that's biopsied because of an abnormal MRI actually turns out to be cancer. MRIs are specifically recommended currently for women who have a high risk of breast cancer, such as those who inherit abnormal genes that predispose them to breast cancer. For the general population, they're not recommended for screening. There are other screening methods that are undergoing evaluation using nuclear medicine techniques. One of them is positron emission mammography, which is offered in Sacramento in one place. The problem is that even though they're sensitive and specific, there is no way of biopsying lesions seen just on that technique at present. So essentially, diagnosis usually comes from a mammogram and then followed by a biopsy. And then treatment depends essentially on how extensive the disease is, essentially on how large the tumor is and whether or not the lymph nodes are involved. Usually, a surgery comes first to remove the tumor, which could be either a lumpectomy, in which only the tumor is taken out, or a mastectomy, in which the entire breast is removed. There are different indications for each procedure. The vast majority of women will have a lumpectomy because they'll be eligible for that procedure. And then usually, at the same time, dye is injected, and the lymph nodes that they take up the dye are taken out initially. That's called the central lymph node procedure. And then if those are positive, then additional lymph nodes are removed. Radiation is commonly done after surgery, especially if you have only lumpectomy. If you have a mastectomy, then there are only a few indications for radiation. But almost every woman who has lumpectomy has radiation to the rest of the breast. And then in terms of further treatment, there is, from the medical oncologist's point of view, there are anti-estrogen treatments. The vast majority of breast cancers are estrogen receptor positive, and so we have pills that can lower estrogen levels or block estrogen receptors that will reduce the risk of recurrence of the cancer. For premenopausal women, those pills are tamoxifen, which is a drug that's been around for 30-plus years and we have a lot of experience with. But for postmenopausal women, now there are better drugs that are better tolerated and actually are better than tamoxifen in terms of reducing the risk of recurrence of the cancer as well. Those drugs are called aromatase inhibitors. They inhibit an enzyme in postmenopausal women that's responsible for production of estrogen. Those drugs are Arimidex, Femara, Aromacin. And they are slightly better. They're better tolerated as well, but they have different side effects, one of which is osteoporosis. They can cause loss of bone density and so require monitoring of bone density when they're used. But we're learning better to deal with bone density issues. We have guidelines for prescribing Fosamax and Fosamax-like drugs to maintain bone density in women who are undergoing anti-estrogen treatment. And we frequently recommend calcium and vitamin D to maintain bone density as well and monitor it on a regular basis. In terms of chemotherapy, chemotherapy is required for some breast cancers, some of them estrogen receptor positive, especially if they're lymph node positive. For estrogen receptor negative breast cancers, there is no anti-estrogen therapy that would be beneficial. So for those patients, mostly chemotherapy. We have a specific subtype of breast cancer called HER2 positive. That's about 20% of all breast cancers, and used to have a bad prognosis before, but now with the availability of a drug called Herceptin, the prognosis of those cancers is actually improved. Now, there are there is some interest in newer and better radiation techniques as well. In the past, all women who had lumpectomy had whole breast radiation. There is some data to suggest that it's not necessary to radiate the whole breast, and that it's sufficient to radiate just the quadrant of the breast where the original tumor lies, because it's been shown that most recurrences happen in that quadrant. So we have trials going on nationwide right now looking at different techniques of just partial breast radiation, just radiating that part of the breast where the tumor is, including a trial looking at radiation at the time of surgery, which would be more convenient because it would be just one treatment as opposed to the 6 weeks of traditional radiation given every day. So I'll stop there, and we'll take questions.
Thank you for those presentations. And if anybody has any questions, please stand up. And I believe we have volunteers ready to run microphones around.
If there's any information of value regarding, as far as breast cancer frequency, ethnicity, demographics, isolated populations, third world, et cetera. Thank you.
Okay, there is some information. Breast cancer tends more commonly to be a disease of white women or of Caucasian women, less frequent in minorities, although there are specific subtypes of inherited breast cancer that are commoner in African Americans and people of Jewish ancestry. In the U.S., breast cancer tends to be a lot more common than it is outside this country, partly probably related to diet more so than genetic issues.
Yes, I had an occasion to have to take Premarin many years ago, and all the wonderful things they were saying that it did, they decided later it was doing just the opposite. You mentioned Fosamax, and I recently had a second fall and for the second time broke my wrist, and the orthopedic surgeon that I was seeing told me that they're finding the same discovery with Fosamax, that it does not do what it was intended to do. And he said, I said, what would you suggest I do? And he said, well, I'll tell you what I did. I took my wife off of it. So we're not recommending it anymore, and I wonder what you know about that.
Well, no, that's not true. The current guidelines still recommend Fosamax and Fosamax-like drugs for osteoporosis or osteopenia, which is not osteoporosis but lower than normal bone density. There is some issue related to the quality of the bone, that bone density that is increased on bisphosphonates. Mm-hmm. So that basically what happens when you take these drugs is that your bone density improves. At least it stops falling. But there have been some recent issues as to exactly how strong the bone is that is formed, But it's by no means conclusive. There have been some case reports. The vast majority of women who have osteopenia or osteoporosis are still recommended to continue taking those drugs and take calcium and vitamin D. There is a small risk of jaw issues as well, osteonecrosis of the jaw. But with the oral drugs, that is very, very rare, less than 1%. And it only happens if you have dental work done on your jaw while you're on the drug. So your dentist needs to be aware.
Thank you.
Do you have any particular information about chemotherapy and visual impairment, such as neurotoxicity that might be particularly affected, or the eyes might be particularly affected, or I've heard some women say they don't want to use a certain drug because it will make it less possible for them to read Braille because it messes with their fingers.
Tamoxifen, not as much as some of the chemo drugs that cause nerve damage. So there are some IV chemotherapy drugs that I use a lot especially in gynecologic cancers and also in colon cancer. And those are a drug compound class called taxane, so something called Taxol. Also, there's a class called platinum drugs, cisplatin, oxaliplatin. They're made of heavy metals, and they tend to cause damage to the nerves. And so you can't. It does cause numbness in the fingertips and the toes. And the more chemotherapy you get, the more likely the damage is to occur. And sometimes that damage is actually permanent. And it's very important that we monitor people during their therapy, because if they're starting to develop any of those problems, we generally have to reduce the drug, dose of the drug, and sometimes we have to stop the drug or find a substitute. Some of these drugs can cause hearing loss, which is a big problem with the platinum agents. So we do have to be careful with that drug. In terms of visual changes and visual loss, the most common thing that I see are temporary changes in vision when we use a lot of steroids. So when we give people steroids, we do it for prevention of nausea. And sometimes people actually get a lot of steroids, and their vision can change a little bit temporarily while they're on the chemotherapy. So I don't know if you have any other experience.
Yeah, the only other issue that I would say specific to breast cancer is that tamoxifen can occasion the risk of cataracts is increased with tamoxifen as compared to people not taking it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can affect your retina. It's a rare problem. It's not common.
I've recently been made aware of another type of breast cancer that I hadn't heard much about when a friend was diagnosed with inflammatory breast cancer. How common is that, and what should one be looking for?
Well, it's not common. It's probably 1% or less of all breast cancer. It's not really a type of breast cancer so much as it is an appearance of a breast cancer. Basically, the breast appears red and inflamed, and that's how the disease gets its name. It can be almost any type of breast cancer that presents that way. But those cases are generally treated with chemotherapy first, and then have to have a mastectomy usually because of the skin involvement. The inflammatory appearance is because of the blockage of the lymph channels under the skin that causes that red appearance, because the tumor cells collect in the skin. And so usually they're treated with chemotherapy first, followed by a surgery then, and then after that radiation usually to the chest wall. That is an aggressive type of breast cancer, and one of the more commonly recurring types of breast cancer because it's so aggressive.
My question was regarding if a person has had been found with precancerous cells and they had to be removed a couple of times, is it more common for that to occur again?
You're talking about breast cancer?
Yes.
Yeah, typically precancer usually means what we call atypical ductal hyperplasia or some other form of atypia, which usually means that you have an increased risk of breast cancer. It's one of the precursor lesions to ductal carcinoma in situ, which is the precursor to invasive breast cancer. So yes, it does mean increased risk of developing breast cancer, particularly if you have the lobular type, lobular carcinoma in situ or atypical lobular hyperplasia. Those increase the risk even more.
I have sort of two questions. One of them is cancer more prevalent in large-breasted women than small-breasted women?
Are you asking whether it is more prevalent?
Is it
not that we know of, no. I mean, it is related to, to put it another way, it is related to weight. Women who are overweight are more likely to develop breast cancer than women who are not overweight. And increasing weight also increases the risk of recurrence of breast cancer that was previously diagnosed.
And the second question is, if a person is had cervical cancer, is there risks of running breast cancer very high?
No, there's no association between breast and cervical cancer.
Thank you.
Yeah, cervical cancer is generally a virally driven disease by human papilloma virus. It's actually accounts for over 99% of cervical cancers. So you're hearing a lot more in the news about cervical cancer vaccines, and I think that's a real important thing to be discussing and talking about, is to prevent. It's another cancer that is largely preventable.
Okay. Thank you very much. It looks like we still are actually running ahead of time now, so if there's any other questions, I think we have time for a couple more questions. Okay.
If a person doesn't have a health insurance, what can you do?
Again, you're asking about breast cancer, or
If a person doesn't have health insurance, what can you do about getting a check for breast cancer? Or?
Well, there is there is a program for women who are diagnosed with breast cancer called the National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Project, which basically will if you have an abnormal mammogram that requires biopsy and you're found to have breast cancer, then you'll be covered by Medicaid or equivalent Medi-Cal in California for the treatment of the breast cancer and afterwards for problems related to the breast cancer itself. That applies to cervical and breast both.
And also, if you have any questions or need more information, I think one of the best resources is the American Cancer Society. They're very helpful. They have a lot of resources for people in terms of educational material and assistance as well. They're not accessible? They don't have phone? Because we talk to them on the phone a lot. Oh, they don't? Can you get them on the phone? Really? So you can't get through on the phone? Wow, that's surprising.
The phone does not allow you to review it in private.
I'm Catherine Skivers from Hayward, and I'm going to say something to both of you doctors. I am not one who usually enjoys hearing medical discussions at our conventions, but I have to tell you, I found this one of the most informative and interesting and well-presented I've ever heard. And I thank you so much for it, and I would urge chapters, we have tape recordings of our programs here, and I think we do our chapters a service and our members if we've got this information far and wide.
My name is Margaret Buffman Garcia. I'm from the Merced area. I have a question regarding the scans. Is it always recommended to do scans, like in the case of colon cancer, prior to the surgical procedures to see if it's spread, or is that something that's done afterwards?
It's generally part. I like the surgeons to do it beforehand, so that's part of the staging process to go ahead and get the CAT scans to make sure that it has not spread anywhere. So typically, they will do a CAT scan of the chest and the abdomen and the pelvis prior to surgery, because if it has spread, if the person is unfortunate enough to have that happen, they don't always need surgery. So we oftentimes will leave the primary tumor in place and go ahead and treat them with chemotherapy and spare them from having a big surgery. It doesn't always help the patient. So I think it is important to get the scans done before the surgery if possible.
And do those scans, is anything like with an MRI, if you've had a hip replacement, it throws it off. Do these scans get affected by anything like that?
CAT scans generally don't. You can have maybe some metal artifact if you have any kind of metal shrapnel or anything in your body. Sometimes you can get a little bit of a scatter artifact from that, but they're usually pretty good. They do give you contrast material that you have to drink, and then they also inject it, and they get a really good picture. So generally it's a pretty good picture.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. If someone has had a complete hysterectomy, should they have pap smears after? Every year, every 2 years.
If you've had a hysterectomy, usually a total hysterectomy usually means that the cervix is removed. So it depends on if you've had a partial or a total. Some hysterectomies, they actually leave the cervix. The cervix is just the little bottom part of the uterus, actually, that kind of pokes out. And so sometimes they leave that in. And if that cervix is still there, then yes, you absolutely should have continued pap smears, but you'd have to find out whether it was a total or a partial. If they remove the whole thing for benign reasons, such as fibroids or excess bleeding, then you don't need to have paps anymore. Still a good idea, though, to have a pelvic every once in a while, too, because they do check the ovaries. So if you still have your ovaries in place, those should probably be checked every once in a while, too.
On the issue of information available in alternate format, we've had a lot of visually impaired women within the last year and a half diagnosed with breast cancer. And what has happened is that the Red Cross will come to their home and leave their kitchen table piled high with printed material that they cannot access.
Right.
To that end, several things are happening. We have some attorneys that are working on a structured negotiation for the lack of accessibility of their website and any materials in alternate format. Meanwhile, one of the women that had breast cancer was able to work with National Braille Press, and a document has been produced. It's in Braille only, and it is available free on a single copy basis by contacting the National Braille Press.
Is there, do you know of any audio materials available for women with breast cancer?
Bonnie, are you in the room? And what we have done, the American Council of Blind Women's Concerns Committee has established a support group on the telephone for visually impaired women with breast cancer that have been diagnosed or who are cancer survivors. And Bonnie Rennie is the person that facilitates that group, along with Linda Perrell and one other person who, all three of them are social workers. And anyone who wants to call in, it's on the first Tuesday of the month. And if you want the information about how to dial in, you can contact me through directly, or if you don't have my contact information, through the CCB office. And I would like both of your cards, please.
Hi, this is Linda. And in answer to the question about audio materials, there is one excellent book that's available from the National Library Service on cassettes. It's called Living Through Breast Cancer by Dr. Carolyn Kalin of Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's have a round of applause. All right, thank you, both of you. And do both of you have any business cards that you could leave on our literature table at the back of the room?
Sure. Okay.
Great. Am I hearing a call for the floor? Is that Kathy? What is it, Kathy?
Hi. We happen to have a minute, Gabe, and I wonder if Beryl Brown is in the room. You know, somebody's here tonight that I think we all ought to know about. I just met somebody that Beryl introduced me to, and it'll only take a minute, and I really would like everybody to know she's here.
Sure, we have plenty of
time. Oh, she went to bed.
Oh.
Well, while I have the microphone.
Now that you've got our attention, Kathy.
Well, we all know George Fogarty, most of us. Well, there are two remaining members in his family, and his cousin is one of them, and she's here at this convention. I just met her a while ago. Beryl brought her. And she tells some wonderful stories and love stories about George. But I just wish we could have told her how much we all think of him.
Yeah, that would have been neat. All right, are we ready to move on to our next item, which is the gentleman to my left, Mr. Rob Turner, with the credentials report.
Okay, thank you. All right. I was trying to think of an expression. You know, they say that it's when something's boring, it's like watching paint dry. I was thinking, what could we say for the blind? It's like, what, listening to white noise or something? I don't know. Anyway, whatever. So there you go. So the point is, I'm going to try to make it a little more exciting than that. not too much, no. And I also did want to mention quickly, I did sit next to Mary on the bus. This is the one that knew, that actually a cousin of George Fogarty's. And she's quite an entertaining lady, that's for sure. She did like to talk about George and the family, and kind of got a kick out of that yesterday. Okay, let's get started. Now, of course, the purpose of the Credentials Committee, for anyone that's new, is we want to make sure that chapters are fairly represented. And we have two types of affiliates. We have statewide affiliates, or general interest, and we have local chapters. The local chapters, their vote total can vary up to, well, let's just say for now, 25 members. They get 5 votes, and then keeping it in terms of multiples of 5, for every additional 5 votes, they get another vote, up to a possible 125 members, or 25 votes. And the simple way to figure it out is just to say, okay, if a chapter has 30 members, they're going to get 6 votes. So you really just divide the 30 by the 5, and you come up with a 6. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to do a new math, you know, Tom Lehrer thing. So anyway, the other thing is you round up. So if you got 28 votes, that's going to count as 30. So anyway, let's go ahead and get started, and we'll get the report going. Okay. So, we start off, we're going to go with the ACB Capital Chapter, President Paul Patchy. Oh, we got a round of applause here. Okay. And I'm going to, what I'll do is I'll just say the number of votes and then the members. And I'll still do that for this, the general interest or the statewide, but there, again, that number doesn't really count. So, eight votes, 42 members. Joni Patchy, the delegate. And Warren Cushman is the alternate. Warren Cushman also on nominations. Next, Active Blind, Inland Valleys, President Christy Crespin. Yep, five votes, long time, Christy. Five votes, 17 members. Melody Banks, delegate, Christy Crespin, alternate, and Melody Banks, nominations, or nominating, I guess is the problem. Okay. Next, Alameda County Chapter. We've got President Peter Crockwell, five votes, 13 members. Katrina McCurdy, delegate, no alternate. Katrina McCurdy, nominating. Association for Multicultural Concerns, President Lillian Scafey, five votes, 40 members. The Teddy Joy Rimhill, alternate, Charles Navaretti, and nominating Teddy Joy. Bayview Chapter, Steve Fort, President. 10 votes, 49 members. Steve Fort, delegate. Connie Skeen, alternate. Steve Fort, nominating. Blind Students of California, President Brandy Morgan. 5 votes, 11 members. Brandy Morgan, delegate. Lena Bandy, alternate. Brandy Morgan, nominating. Braille Revival League of California, Marlene O'Neill, President. 5 votes, 47 members. Delegate, Marlene O'Neill. Alternate, none. Nominating, Marlene O'Neill. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, CCCLV. President, Bernice Kandarian. 5 votes, 77 members. Delegate, Bernice Kandarian. Alternate, Coletta Davis. Nominating, Donna Sanchez. California Library Users of America, Kahlua. Okay. All right, let's take a step back. California Library Users of America, President Jerry Arakawa. 5 votes, 25 members. Jerry Arakawa, delegate. Alternate, none. Nominating, Jerry Arakawa. Central Coast Low Vision Council, CCLVC. President Michelle Mason, 5 votes, 17 members. Delegate Thomas Athanasian, who I had the pleasure of sitting next to at the library luncheon. Michelle Mason is the alternate, and no nominating rep. Compton Chapter, President Michael Williams, 11 votes, 55 members. Michael Williams, delegate. Alternate, Linda Hardwick. Nominating, Michael Williams. East Los Angeles Chapter, President Louis Herrera. 7 votes, 35 members. Louis Herrera, delegate. No alternate. Nominating, Louis Herrera. Glendale Burbank Chapter, President Artis Bazin. 7 votes, 35 members. Delegate, Artis Bazin. Alternate, Debbie Berry. Nominating, Artis Bazin. Golden Gate Chapter, President, Dr. Martin Jones. 5 votes, 21 members. Marvelina Gray, delegate. Alternate, Martin Jones. Nominating, Marvelina Gray. I think it'll be fine if either one of you show up. No? We have a, okay, let's talk about that. Do we have a problem with that? Okay. So I was told this morning by Marvelena that she planned to do it. Martin, is that a problem for you? I mean, oh, Chris, I'm sorry. Chris was the one that, that's right. So what should we do?
Mr. Chairman,
Kathy. Okay, then let's go ahead and change it, and sounds like he will attend. I'm fine as long as, you know.
My point was, you should have one or the other now,
but okay.
If they decided both
walls in, you're going to have a problem. Yes, well, yeah, okay. All right, so, Martin, you want to handle it, and that'll be fine. Okay, so, okay. Moving on now, the Greater Bakersfield chapter of the Blind. Penny Valdovinos, president, 5 votes, 16 members. Randy Morgan, delegate. John Ross, alternate. Penny Valdovinos, nominating. Greater Los Angeles chapter.
Hold on a second, Rob.
Okay.
Greater Bakersfield, did you say Brandy Morgan is the delegate or alternate? I believe we had her listed as the delegate for blind students as well. If I'm not mistaken, I think somebody can be a delegate or alternate for two different.
I think you're right. Uh-oh, we got a problem. I should have thought of that. Okay. So let's, how do we, okay. Yeah,
Brandy, are you in here?
Or Penny? Is Penny?
Hang on, I will try to solve this.
Okay.
Our esteemed president is attempting to resolve it.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on.
Okay.
And we'll get that resolved. And it's possible, I mean, you know, the solution would be...
We're bringing in the Sopranos. For
All right, so anyway. Okay. So we've got the Greater Los Angeles chapter, President Pam Metz, 5 votes, 22 members. Ken Metz is delegate. Ken Metz, yep, and then Richard, the alternate delegate Richard Harmon, nominating Ken Metz.
And Mr. Chair, if I can, just for a second.
Yes. Well, that's good. I appreciate that. Yeah, so he's just so everybody knows what he said. He 26 members, but we'll see. We didn't get the update. Okay, let's see. Greater San Joaquin Valley Chapter. Tom Randall, president. 5 votes, 18 members. Olivia Presley, delegate. Mary Beth Randall, alternate. And Mary Beth, nominating. Okay.
One more time. Is Brandy Morgan in the room? Or does anyone know where she is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll just move along. And I was told she was on her way down here or should be here, so we'll move along and ask for her again in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Penny, you know, could be the delegate or something. It might be the best solution. Anyway, we'll get that worked out.
Yeah, we'll straighten it out.
Guide Dog Users of California, President Ann Kaiser, 5 votes, 51 members. Delegate Ann Kaiser, alternate none, nominating Ann Kaiser. Humboldt Council Chapter, we've got James Forbes is their president. They've got 5 votes, 13 members. The delegate is James Forbes. Jill O'Connell is listed as the alternate. And James Forbes nominating. Inland Empire Chapter. President Foster Brown. 6 votes, 30 members. Delegate Bessie Dunn. Alternate Foster Brown. Nominating Michael Esparza. Orange County Chapter, President Catherine Schmidt-Whitaker. 5 votes, 17 members. Bonnie Rennie, Delegate. Alternate, Bob Rennie. Nominating, Bonnie Rennie. Orientation Center for the Blind, Albert Contreras, President. 5 votes, 24 members. Delegate, Albert Contreras. Alternate, none. Albert Contreras, nominating. Pyramid Chapter, Onetta Sally, President. 5 votes, 14 members. Onetta Sally is the delegate. Willie Bradley, alternate. And nominating is Onetta Sally. Randolph Shepard, Vendors of California. David Hanlon, President. 5 votes. Roy Harmon, Delegate. Gianna Hanlon, Alternate. Nominating, Roy Harmon. Redwood Empire Chapter, President, Sean Ryan. 9 votes, 47 members. Beryl Brown, Delegate. Diane Deutsch, the alternate, and nominating is Diane Deutsch. San Diego Braille Club, Jacqueline Jackson, President. 5 votes, 24 members. Jacqueline Jackson, delegate, alternate, Monique McCurley. Nominating Jacqueline Jackson. San Diego Chapter, President Jerry Wilson. 6 votes, 31 members. Delegate, Glenda Castle. Alternate, Larry Freeman. Nominating, Glenda Castle. San Francisco Chapter, President, Linda Perel. 6 votes, 31 members. Delegate, Linda Perel. Alternate, David Jackson. Nominating, Linda Perel. San Gabriel Valley Chapter, President, Donna Pomerantz. 9 votes, 45 members. Delegate, Donna Pomerantz. Alternate, Gloria Broderick. Nominating, Donna Pomerantz. San Mateo County Chapter, President, Phil Kuttner. 10 votes, 48 members. Jeannie Ackerman, Delegate Jeannie Ackerman. Alternate, none. Nominating, Jeannie Ackerman. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, President, Mike Keithley. 14 votes, 71 members. Delegate, Susan Scholter. Alternate is Ruben Armenta. Nominating, Roger Peterson. Solano County Council of the Blind, President, Roseanne McLaughlin. 5 votes, 13 members. Delegate, Diane Phelps. No alternate, no nominating committee rep. Okay, Yosemite Gateway Chapter. The President is Margaret Buckman Garcia. 5 votes, 25 members. Margaret Buckman Garcia is the delegate. Mildred Bassel, alternate. And Margaret Buckman Garcia, nominating. Now, not attending the convention, Antelope Valley, Butte County Council of the Blind, El Dorado County Chapter, San Bernardino. So those are the ones that are not attending. Okay. And the High Desert Chapter had sent in delegates and everything, but wasn't able to contact any of them, and they hadn't checked in, so I don't know what the situation was with them. Oh, Long Beach. Gosh darn it. Thanks, Ken. Okay. So that concludes my report. Now, I do want to thank... I want to thank the members of the committee. Steve Ford is my backup. He's make sure that we have everything we need. And Coletta Davis, of course. And then also not on the committee, but someone who makes this possible, Mike Keithley is the one who does the embossing and the formatting. So I just want to thank everybody. Thank them all.
Okay. And before we have any motions or anything, I'm told Brandy Morgan that you're in the room now. Could you please come up front here? We need to speak at you.
What happened, and wish I would have thought of this earlier, but the situation is that we have you listed as the a student, the delegate, and I think it was the...
Greater Bakersfield.
Yeah, and that's a conflict. So
that's fine. We need to change Greater Bakersfield to Penny Valdovino.
Okay, that's what I thought you might do. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so the report now will say that Penny Valdovinos is going to be is the delegate for the Greater Bakersfield chapter.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Not sure.
Yes, it does.
All right. Thank you, Rob, for that report. Do we have a motion to accept the credentials report?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
It's been moved, and I'm guessing it's been seconded. Any discussion? I think we've had enough. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the thing that Jeff always forgets, abstentions? All right. The credentials report has been accepted. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
That's a lot of work compiling all that information. Yes, Kathy.
If I counted correctly, we have six chapters not currently attendance of the convention. Was that right?
Let's see. Long Beach, El Dorado, San Bernardino, I will say, even though Butte County isn't here, that it's a little unfair to say they didn't attend because Joanne and Al Beagler were here for the day, but they couldn't attend.
And Lewis Preston's here for Long Beach.
Yes, so it's just that they couldn't.
My question is, do we have a procedure in place to contact the chapters, tell them that we miss them, and ascertain why they're not here?
The only thing I can say is that I have, I did attempt to contact several of these chapters when we hadn't heard. But I think we can certainly make it a point to let them know that we miss them.
Artist, was that you that I heard say yes?
I'm not finished yet, Dave.
I wanted to make sure that the artist had said yes.
And another thing I have to mention, too, just so everybody's aware, I've been talking with the office on a pretty regular basis, and I know the office staff has made a tremendous effort to really, I wasn't going to talk about this, but I guess now that it's come up, I will. You know, this has really gotten worse since it just seems as if things are getting worse and worse in terms of chapters responding and getting in their forms on time. It's a nightmare. I know Diane and Ed, they make a lot of calls, and I've certainly had to make a number of calls just to say, gee, get your forms in, guys. You know, there would have been three or four other chapters that wouldn't have been represented had we, probably six chapters that wouldn't have been represented. So this is a problem, and I really do think that in the future, I really want to encourage, especially people who are here, please encourage your chapters to get these, the dues paid and the credentials in. It's going to make it a lot easier. And it just looks so much better and feels so much better from a morale point of view, when you've got chapters that are anxious to come to the convention. They want to get represented. So it seems like there's kind of a disconnect, and that's a little scary. So let's really try to go back to the chapters and let them know how important these conventions are and how important it is to be represented. And anyway, get off my soapbox.
I would like to ask, we've now passed a motion to have the credentials committee report adopted, which means I believe we can conduct business. Is the motion in order on the subject of missing chapters?
Can we do the? Can we get the report passed first?
We did that.
We already passed that, and that's. I think that's why Kathy's asking if that's in order.
My question is, can I make a motion now that I want to make?
I think so.
I move that the president or someone he designates write a letter to each of the chapters who were not in attendance, letting them know how much we miss them, and wondering why they were not here, and if any way we can assist them.
Secretarial
jar. Are you trying to pass that off, Mr. President?
On discussion.
Wait, Kathy, can I give a friendly amendment?
not that the secretary be the one to do it. Yes, I will exclude the secretary in my motion if my second will accept it.
Thank you, Kathy. Your payment is on its way.
Hey, I wouldn't have your job for more money than the council has. Anyway, on a serious discussion, I am very serious about this. This isn't the first time we've had chapters missing.
No.
And in our 75th year, we don't want to lose this number of chapters. And I think that it may be that we need to send somebody to see them. I don't know what it takes, but I believe that that letter should come. And, Jeff, sometimes...
Oh, I'll write it. Believe me.
Well, I would tell you if you'd write it, I'd sign it. But anyway...
No, I'll write it.
No, I think this should come from the president. I think this warrants your attention and... You're the man, and you're the one that I think can get a good response from these people. Anyway, it was moved and seconded.
Is there any further discussion on it? All right, all in favor, I'd say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right, Mr. President.
It will be done.
Well, not sure about that. Maybe so.
Jeff, were you looking for the...
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, this is a tough issue, and I'm... totally in support of Kathy's motion. We know why, you know, some of the chapters, the leaders don't come because they're frankly not interested, and in a couple cases. In some other cases, it's probably money, and the only thing that would get them there is if we decided that the organization needed to... underwrite their, you know, delegates' ability to come here. And, of course, the problem with that is that we'd have a lot of chapters in that mix if we did that. So it's a I'm not saying there's an easy answer here, and we definitely need to do this, but we'll see how much of a result it gets. So there's some real problems out there. There are chapters. I know Long Beach, for example, did not come because of money. So this is, you know, and so there are problems. So, okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Okay, and there's somebody at the mic, I'm told.
Yes, Sheila Gunn Cushman. The El Dorado County chapter, I don't know much about them, but they're close to Sacramento. I wonder if something could be done where they could relay their information and we could do it by proxy or something.
No.
Okay. Don't shoot me. I'm done. Thanks.
All right. I believe we're now ready to move on to our next item, which is one of what I think is one of the more interesting reports of the evening. I shouldn't say more interesting of the evening, but one of the ones that I look forward to, and that is our ACB report. And here this evening to speak to us, staying up late because I believe on his time it's probably approaching midnight, is Eric Bridges, our Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs for ACB.
Good evening. Well, I'd like to start off by letting you all know that Melanie Brunson says hello, and she wishes she could be out here with you all.
Well,
I'd like to thank you all for having me out here for your spring convention, and wanted to share with you just an update on where ACB nationally is headed with its advocacy and governmental affairs initiatives. I know a few of you were in Washington in late February for the legislative seminar, and I think the work that was done by those that attended has borne some really tasty fruit. How about that? One of our initiatives, as you all are probably well aware of by now, is the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act, H.R. 734, otherwise known as the Quiet Car Bill. And it was introduced in early January of this year, actually January 28th. And by the time of the legislative seminar, it had garnered 62 co-sponsors, which is pretty good. Most of those co-sponsors had signed on as last year when it was known as H.R. 5734. So there wasn't a lot of new blood signing on to the bill. But a funny thing happened. During the legislative seminar and after the legislative seminar, about 43 more members signed on as co-sponsors. And that's directly to do with us. Us as an organization. There are several members from the California delegation who signed on last year and signed on this year. Barbara Lee, Bob Filner, Maxine Waters, Pete Stark, Rohrbacher. There's a bunch. This is a large state, as I'm sure you all are aware. But there are a lot. There are still, however, many more that have not signed on from the state of California. And we can get to that a little later. But the actual advocacy, hard work from the legislative seminar and on through until today has resulted in H.R. 734 having 105 co-sponsors to date. This is a big deal. This is a really big deal. What this means is that there's an increased level of knowledge and support for this legislation to move forward. It's something that, you know, I've been with ACB, it'll be 2 years, the beginning of June. I have not seen this level of passion and commitment to an issue since I've been at ACB. Obviously, we have other issues that members care very deeply about, such as accessible paper currency, which we'll get to in a few minutes, that are not really currently active on the legislative level, but are, you know, being handled in other forums. But this particular issue is one that I'd like to thank the members of CCB and really our members in our state and special interest affiliates across the country for doing the hard work. It makes my job a lot easier when people are signing on and saying, "Oh, Eric, yeah, your people in, you know, New York called me, hassled me, and so I co-sponsored, you know, or whatever." It makes my life easier. It raises ACB's profile on Capitol Hill, which is very important. Because we have a lot of initiatives that we're looking to undertake, and that furthermore we're looking for members to champion. This makes it a lot easier. So that was one issue. Our other issue, our other legislative imperative for the year, is the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, and it's a mouthful. Last year, I'm sure you all are aware, it was introduced in the House as H.R. 6320, and there was a hearing held to discuss the bill and the provisions in the bill, and a member of CCB flew out to testify on ACB's behalf, Sergeant Major Jesse Acosta, and he did a wonderful job. This this bill is a little bit more sticky because it deals with the telecom industry and various aspects of it, various sectors of it. And what we're hearing from Congressman Ed Markey, who sponsored the bill last year, Congressman Markey's a Democrat from Massachusetts. What we're hearing from him and his office is that this bill will be reintroduced. It will be probably reintroduced within the next 2 to 3 months. And the plan is to get this passed by the end of the 111th Congress. A lot has gone on with this piece of legislation. What is this legislation, Eric? You're probably going, or at least I hope you're not, because I'm not doing my job. This bill seeks to really essentially open up the Communications Act. And there's a section in the Communications Act. It's called Section 255, and it deals with accessibility to telecommunications products or devices. And this bill would seek to, among other things, deal with the inaccessibility of cell phones that you buy off the shelf in an AT&T store or what have you. It would mandate, it would require that the manufacturers provide the same level of accessibility in those cell phones / PDAs that our sighted brethren have access to every day without having to pay $450. Because as you all are aware, the cell phone is no longer just a cell phone anymore. It has multiple uses. And if we're going out and having to buy these really costly phones, we might as well get the best bang for our buck without having, you know, there's nothing wrong. And, you know, I applaud Code Factory and Nuance for doing what they do. But the sheer economics of it make it very, very, very difficult for a population to go out and purchase that stuff when this population has a high percentage of unemployment and underemployment. All right, so I'll get off my soapbox on that and move to my next soapbox. One of the other provisions in this bill deals with something called accessible user interfaces. What are those? It sounds like some sort of alien type thing. An accessible user interface in this term would be where if you go and sit down on your couch at night after work, you have a beer or a Coke or whatever, and you want to turn on your TV, and you turn it on, and you want to figure out what's on TV, but you can't because you can't access the electronic program guide. You want to buy a crappy movie off of On Demand. Well, you can't do that either. You need your sighted wife or husband or sighted neighbor to come over to help you rent Geely or whatever. All of those aspects are inaccessible to individuals that are blind or visually impaired. One of the fundamental parts of this is that we all go out and buy TVs. Many of us have cable boxes. Many of us have DVD players, satellites. And several of us even have DVRs as part of the cable box that we can't even use. And we don't even realize it. And some of us get charged for it and don't even realize it. I'm one of those people, or at least I was. What we want is the same level of access. One of the ironies is that, obviously, I'm coming to video description and the lack of a mandate for video description, but there are still several shows that are being broadcast with video description. The Simpsons and CSI, I believe, and a slew of PBS programming. Well, one of the ironies, the sweet, horrible ironies of this whole subject of video description is that most people can't even access video description independently. It's because you have to go into these user interfaces to find the necessary feature to turn on. So that's what we're talking about, is having the same level of accessibility to the home theater environment that others have. Now, let's get to video description. Okay, video description is a huge issue within ACB, and it has been for a long time. What we're seeking in this legislation is to restore the modest requirements that were overturned in 2002 with the lawsuit that occurred. This would require the major networks to provide 4 hours a week of described programming, and and I believe the top five cable networks would be also required to do this. We're not asking for the moon, but what we're asking for is a starting point. Finally, and by no means is this the least important aspect of what this bill seeks to do, and in fact, I would argue it's probably the most important, access to televised emergency information, the crawl on the bottom of the TV screen. The FCC requires that a tone go off before the crawl begins on the bottom of the screen. Why do they do that? For the blind and visually impaired. How nice of them. So in other words, you hear this, you know something's wrong. You then turn on your radio or stick your hand out a window or, I don't know, curl up in the fetal position and wonder. Or you start flipping around the various stations to see if they're going to break into programming to tell you what's going on. The point here is that this activity falls on you. It's your responsibility to figure out what's going on when everybody else can just look at it. This is time, precious time, that you're losing in this process. Because, as you all know, California's like its own planet, in that you guys have literally every single natural disaster or capable of having one known to man. And so it could be any number of things. It could be it could be an earthquake, a mudslide, a flood, a fire. I don't know if you get tornadoes out here. I'm sure you're capable of it. All right. Or it could be something else. It could be a boil water alert. It could be any number of other things that happen that are time-sensitive events that you need to know about so that you can act, and you can act quickly. So what we're asking for in this bill is to have the FCC identify methods whereby visually impaired and blind individuals have equal access to that information. We feel it's vital. Okay, so those are two legislative imperatives for the year. So what else is happening? There's plenty happening, actually. Within the last week, the American Council of the Blind was invited to attend a transportation roundtable in the House of Representatives. Congressman John Mica, who is the ranking member on the Committee for Transportation and Infrastructure, sent a personal invite to ACB requesting our attendance at this roundtable. We were one of only five disability-related organizations to be invited to this event. It took place last Thursday morning, as a matter of fact, in the Rayburn Building. And Congressman Mica convened this roundtable. It was four tables set up in a square. And he said, he kicked the meeting off by saying, I wanted to thank Eric Bridges for being here this morning. Eric, I wanted to let you know that the whole reason why I convened this roundtable this morning was due to an extraordinary meeting I had with the Florida Council of the Blind in February. And he went on to say, their explanation of the challenges that blind and visually impaired Americans have in independently identifying hybrid vehicles touched me. And it made me all the more aware of this challenge. So he kicked off this whole meeting. And mind you, there were probably, 90 people in the room by saying that. It made me very proud to be a member of ACB. By the way, this is what, another example of advocacy and creation and maintenance of relationships with members of Congress. It cannot be underestimated. You know, I'm sure folks come to legislative seminar every year and go, well, this was fun. This is great. And then they go on about their lives, which people do. People have busy lives. But there really is no substitute for maintaining a good relationship with your member of Congress. Whether or not you voted for that person, they represent you, and they should represent your interests. And if they stop doing it, you should kick them out. And one of the things that we're seeing is that a lot of folks, there's an intense anger around the country with Washington and with members of Congress that really you could argue have not been representing their members' interests. I'll leave it at that. So this transportation roundtable, we talked about obviously the hybrid vehicle bill, and also just briefly I touched on the challenge that I hear on a weekly basis from members that call in to tell me that their bus routes are being shortened, that paratransit is no longer running as far as it had been, or running as late in the evening or running on the weekends. And the disconnect that we within ACBC between the money that was allotted in the economic stimulus for the creation of new transportation initiatives, and on the operational side of the business, municipalities cutting service. Mm-hmm. And Congressman Micah, along with the chairman of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, Congressman James Oberstar of Minnesota, agreed that unless we as a nation can figure out how to deal with the operational side of public transportation, these large infrastructure projects will create jobs while they're under construction, but will they ever be able to function? will the trains be able to move? Will there be people hired that will be paid to drive those trains? Is the real question, and it's a challenge. So that was you know, a big issue. Other stuff that's going on, just briefly, the Social Security case that's going on, where Social Security refuses to provide its beneficiaries with their information in alternate formats. I'm sure you're all well aware of that as it's taking place out here. the beginning of that trial has been moved back to September. Mid-September is what it looks like right now. So just a brief update on that. Accessible currency. Accessible currency is something that we all care deeply about, and the Department of Treasury has asked for an extension. Before you do that, and I understand your skepticism, they have identified some alternate potential solutions, and what they want to do is to be able to have a little more time to test those. So it'll be also probably sometime August, September before we hear from them again. But let me be clear. These are paper currency-based solutions. They're not technological solutions, something dealing with readers or anything of that nature. So with that, I really thank you very much for having me here, and I'd be happy to take some questions.
Thank you, Eric. We do probably have time for a couple of questions. So if anyone has some questions.
I have a mic in my hand.
Oh. Kathy,
am I recognized?
Go ahead, Kathy. We'll recognize you, then Frank.
Eric, H.R. 1931 was introduced by Pete Stark of California in a currency bill. And I know there was some unhappiness with the fact that some people didn't like his suggestions for how the bill should be marked. However, I had said some time ago that I would predict that Treasury would ask for an extension. Having worked for Treasury for a long time, that's what they do when they don't want to do something. They ask for an extension. And I am wondering why. I have to tell you, it's not because the bill is named has my name in it, but I'm deeply disappointed that we didn't go forward with that, and I'd like to know why, even though the Treasury thing was going forward, why did we not take advantage of a bill that was introduced, and there was a website put up where people could put their names on it and indicate how much interest there were. And before Bud Keith died, he told me there were over 7,000 signatures on that piece of paper, on that thing, telling him that we would like that bill passed. And I'm disappointed. I'd like to know why we couldn't do that in tandem with waiting for the ship to come in with the Treasury people on it.
Well, I think the primary reason why we didn't move forward on that piece of legislation is that it prescribed specific solution. Without any real research or survey from the broader blindness community. And we talked with Congressman Stark's staff. I talked with Congressman Stark's staff on several different occasions, trying to see if there was a way for us to modify the language so that it would be less prescriptive, but would allow for us to do the necessary ACB, along with obviously the Department of Treasury, to do the necessary work to figure out what would be the most beneficial solution. And Congressman Stark was secure in his belief that his way was the correct way. And, it wasn't that we opposed his piece of legislation. It just was that there was, I believe the bill called for corner cutting. And there are a lot of different trains of thought out there. I am not an expert in currency. I'm not an expert in much of anything, actually. but one of the challenges behind this was what we wanted was to get some real good information from folks to figure out what would work for the largest amount of people. And his bill prescribed a very narrow solution.
Thanks, Hector. I'm going to recognize Frank, and then I was told that Mike Keithley is up, and then I think we're going to have to put an end to the questions. I'm not sure if anybody else had any, but I think we're going to have time for those two more questions, and then we're going to have to move on this evening.
Eric, this is Frank Welty, your counterpart here in California. And a two-part question. First off, can you tell us any specific actions that you need us to be doing in order to push H.R. 734 forward here? Are there specific representatives here in California that you'd like us to target? And by the way, before I ask my second question, we are in the process of getting a bill introduced in the California state legislature in support of H.R. 734. And it'll be a resolution in endorsing H.R. 734. And the second thing is going beyond co-sponsors, what should we be looking ahead as far as the progress of H.R. 734?
I would say California Republicans for the first answer. There are a lot of Democrats from the state of California, progressive Democrats, that are signed on. The bill, however, has bipartisan support from the pretty far conservative arm of the Republican Party to the very liberal aspects of the Democratic Party. But the one thing that I think, with the exception of maybe one California representative.
Filner
is a Democrat. It would be nice to see more California Republicans represented as co-sponsors. As for its progress, it's our hope that we can get this done by the end of the 111th Congress. There was language that appeared in the omnibus bill that was signed just a couple weeks ago that funds the federal government till the end of 2009, that had funding for the Department of Transportation to do what our bill says should be done at the Department of Transportation. The one caveat to that, though, is that it said that the research, study, and implementation of all of this should be done by June 1st of 2009. Not very likely to happen. So we're pushing forward. We're speaking with the Department of Transportation, as well as Congressman Ed Towns, who is the chief sponsor of the bill. you know, we've had 43 members sign on in just a little over a month as co-sponsors, which is a big deal. So there is momentum. And this issue is no longer being ignored. It's actually fairly high up on people's radar right now on the Hill, which is great. So the key is for us to keep putting pressure by adding more co-sponsors and hopefully getting a hearing at some point here before the end of the year.
Hi, I'm Mike Keithley. In the communications for the 21st century, will the language about video description be changed so that it won't be challenged by the broadcast industry the way it was last time?
Yeah, well, in essence, it won't be able to be challenged because it'll be law. It won't be a regulation. So it'll be the whole crux of the lawsuit dealt with, is it the Motion Picture Association of America, saying that the FCC didn't have the authorization or the ability to regulate video description. And here, it'll just be passed and it'll become law.
Thank you, Eric. That was a very informative report. Okay, let's move on now. Back by popular demand this evening is my favorite mensch, Jeff Tom.
All right, thank you. Okay.
I just want to say a couple words about Eric. We are, I guess if I had to compare him to somebody in our organization, I'd compare him to, the man who in our organization is probably as knowledgeable and gets as much done as anybody we've got, and that's Gene Lozano. Eric just, he is bright, he is prepared and dedicated, and he gets the job done. Now, and we are so lucky to have him. I will say, and I think Gay can back me up, that having been with him on resolutions, there is another side to Eric, which we probably won't go into. But
maybe we can invite Eric to join us in resolutions tonight, and he'll share some of that. Yeah, well, that was a foregone conclusion.
Okay. At least I'm nicer than Gabe on that regard. But barely.
And it only depends on what night it is.
That's true. Okay. Whether you're a devotee of the Bible or a Pete Seeger, you all know that there's a season for everything under heaven. This is our season, the CCB season. Before we look ahead, let's take a look at some of the accomplishments and changes of the past few months. And I want to highlight one that I think stands out of the things that have happened in this organization, and it's happened at both ends of the state. You all know, well, we'll get to the both in a minute. This is getting off to a good start, I can tell. I think all those words from Reuben Toff went to my head today. You all know of the tragedy that happened in Los Angeles a few months ago. It was truly shameful that the death of a blind person had to create the trigger to bring about the change that was necessary. But once that event happened, it galvanized the LA area chapters into action, and they were finally able to do something that they long wanted to do but couldn't get the Los Angeles Metropolitan Transit Authority to complete. The chapters got together, worked on language, showed up at a meeting, and made sure that action is going to happen in the future. And I want to acknowledge everyone in the Los Angeles area that participated in that effort, because it truly shows what we can do when we get together. Similarly, I want to acknowledge, that's right, let's give them a hand. The problem of car barriers is such a danger to all of us, and we hope that the efforts that are starting to come to fruition in Los Angeles are going to be a harbinger of excellent things to come. Similarly, I want to acknowledge, and boy, he had to do it the hard way, but in San Francisco, Chris Gray has worked for years after his accident, and he is continuing. That's right, and he is continuing in his efforts. To attempt to get Muni
to do what they should have been doing years ago. Chris's efforts, and well, along with others in the city as well, have been a little more difficult because of the fact that Muni has been far less willing to change than has LAMTA, as a matter of fact. But he continues, and I know that eventually he and others in the city will get some justice in this matter and for the future of blind and visually impaired riders of Muni.
Yes, we will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I want to also recognize someone that you've heard a little bit during this week and someone that you'll hear from tomorrow. Change is always difficult. We lost an outstanding Capitol representative when Dan Kaiser moved on to work for Mariko Yamada, and I hear very good things. I hear this little scuttlebutt around. You know, you always hear these things when you're, you know, sort of in... I have my inside role and my outside role. In my inside role, I hear these things. But it was a tough loss to take. But we were lucky. We had excellent candidates, and I think we chose wisely. Everybody in this room just about virtually knows what Frank Welty has done these many years. He has hit the ground running. As someone noted in a little earlier today, he's already been to, 90 legislative offices or whatever. He has engineered the introduction of a joint resolution to urge Congress to pass H.R. 734. It's all we can do at this point. We did what we could do last year to try and get some of our own research money, but we failed, although we got all the way to the governor. But we're at least going to lend our support to that bill and get the resolution passed. This year it's going to be difficult to pass almost anything. But we're working. Frank is rapidly learning a lot of the issues. We're going to be working on things that have been a thorn in our side for a while. Pretty soon we're going to get involved in recurring issues that Dan worked on for many years as well with the state veterans homes. There's just a whole lot of issues, and I know that you are going to see in the years to come the same sort of excellence that we had with Dan. You will see it with Frank. So let's hear it one more time. You know, a long time ago, and I know you're all familiar with this song, because even if for some way in the world you didn't know who Stevie Wonder was, you know who the phone companies are. There was a song about reaching out and touching someone. Or, if you've seen all those little vignettes from the Foundation for a Better Life, you've seen their vignette on reaching out. These are hard times, but reaching out can move mountains. Let me give you a few examples of what we have done already in terms of our outreach. Last year, SB 1608 was a bill clearly meant to limit the rights of persons with disabilities against vis-a-vis building owners. Even if the building owners were doing their best to tell us that they really wanted things that would help us, they were really trying to do their best to flout the law. But through the efforts of Dan, CCB was a leading factor in forming a coalition of disability individuals and organizations that, although it couldn't stop the bill from passing, did enable significant amendments that potentially ameliorate much of the harm the bill may cause. We are, for example, going to have a commission on disabilities, and I'm not prepared to say yet who might be on it, but I have a feeling that we will have a representative at some point on that commission. Turning in a different direction. One of the finest organizations of blindness professionals, and this is an instance of reaching out that is very, in some ways, minuscule in what it actually did. But it's very illustrative of what you can do by just speaking up. And for once, it's oddly something I did. One of the fine organizations in this country of blindness professionals for the past 60 years is the California Transcribers and Educators of the Visually Handicapped. primarily composed of educators, this organization is unparalleled in the nation with respect to its accomplishments in the field of education for students with visual impairments, founded by people like Phil Hatlin, who still come, no matter where he lives, Washington or Kentucky or wherever he is, Kentucky now, they still come. And really, there is no organization like it. Many people that come from other states say they'd really rather go to this than an AER than a conference of the national organization. The last few years, we have had a presence at CTEVH conventions. People like Richard and Peter and many others. Joni Patchy has helped. My wife Leslie is on the board. Well, at their convention a couple of weeks ago, we also had a presence there. We had our exhibit table. But the reaching out I want to talk to you about had happened at a very unexpected time. We were sitting at a brunch, and they had just gone through a little slideshow of their 60 years. Very well narrated, by the way. Slideshow of their 60 years. And, oh, the dog is waiting for the high point of this particular. They just get to the punchline. And they just said, you know, we have recommendations to change the name. And the top recommendation is California Transcribers and Educators of the Visually Impaired. And then there's California Transcribers and Educators of the Blind and Visually Impaired. And then there was a third one that I can't even remember what it was. But they said, but clearly the first one is the one we like most because it's a really good thing. All these people got up and said, yeah, it's good. It's close to what we've got. You know, impaired is better than handicapped. And so and we don't want to make it too long. And visually impaired is really good. And I'm leaning over to Leslie and I'm saying, Leslie, why do they have blind and visually impaired in there? What's wrong with that? And nobody was saying anything. She said, why don't you say something? So I got up. And I said it. I said, look, you know, you've been teaching blind people as well as visually impaired people for the last 60 years. It's about time. You know, you should recognize this. And you know, I set off a tidal wave. There was Jerry Koontz and Stuart Wittenstein and everybody. Yeah, good thing, good thing. So they took a vote, and it was unanimous to change it to the CTEVI. So, you know, it's just reaching out and saying something sometime that can make a difference. As little as that may be, you know, you just have to do what you can. So, I think we need to continue to reach out in our future in order to make sure that we reach our maximum potential. Because I cite this example, again, not because of its importance in the grand scheme of things, but because it illustrates how reaching out can make a difference. So what kinds of reaching out must we do? Well, how about fundraising? I don't like fundraising. A lot of you probably don't like fundraising. Boy, I wish I had the knack that Rhonda had for it. Oh, boy, do I ever. But, you know, we can't afford not to like fundraising. And we also can't afford to make fundraising something that we do by giving our own money. Because we don't have enough money to make a difference. That doesn't mean we don't give money. Of course we do. But we don't have enough to make a difference. So we've got to reach out. We have to reach out to others. We have to look at lists of charities and look at them and determine whether they can give their money to us. We have to do the little things. Like, for example, we are now listed on the United Way campaigns for state and local employees. This year, we'll probably make, I don't have a final figure yet, but we'll probably make $300 to $400. Well, that's not much, but if every one of us talked to one or two state or local employees and said, why don't you, if you're going to give some money, give to CCB, it could be 1,000. It could be 2,000. It's small, but it's the start, and it wouldn't cost us a dime to do it. We just have to open our mouths. Every year, every fall, this campaign takes place. So I urge you, come next September, reach out to those people that you know. Reach out to people and tell them that they can go on eBay and put stuff up there, and hopefully somebody will buy it. So far, we've had a couple of things donated. Nobody's bought it. But, you know, you got to keep on trying. I thought Martin Jones would have him in his place, but apparently at the President's dinner, but apparently did not. Anyway, we all have it in us to reach out in terms of fundraising if we only try a little harder. But it's not just in matters such as fundraising that we need to reach out. In these difficult economic times, people who are blind or have low vision and that are on fixed incomes are seeing services decrease right along with their incomes. SSI benefits will be cut in July after not increasing for, how long has it been since the last increase? A year and a half? It's been a while. And unless something happens, and it's not likely to, they will go down a little bit in July. Transportation is being cut. You know, we see all this, and if those of you on the listservs have had this discussion, it's absolutely true. We see all this money for capital expenditures, all this money for buying buses, but they can't hire enough bus drivers to run the buses, so what good have the buses? So they cut bus lines. No weekend service here, no night service there. It's the same old story. What can we do? We have to reach out. We have to form coalitions. We have to do all that we can. Yes, we probably won't keep all the services that we have in these particularly difficult times, but we will keep more than we might have lost if we don't reach out. And when we form these coalitions now, in the future, when things do turn around, and they will, we will be in a better position to regain services when the time comes. Whether we're working with groups that we seldom work with, or groups that we work with all the time, we need to be prepared to work very closely so that we can put the pressure on our legislative leaders to develop plans and to develop legislation that will not unfairly place the burden of this crisis on the backs of those who can least afford it. So as we begin our second 75 years of improving opportunities for those who are blind or vision impaired, let's keep reaching out. It's good for us. It's good for everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. One of the big ones right now is transportation. The area where I live, we just went through a bunch of cuts, and the bus that I take to get to work was cut altogether. So it's definitely happening. They're cutting it. So that brings us down to the last item on our agenda, which is the special elections for second vice president. Jeff, did you want to?
Yes, I have the cards, the magic cards here. The cards with the chapters and the votes on them that Mr. Turner so kindly prepared for me. Okay. Oh, it says ACB Capital Chapter, 412 votes.
Wait a second, give me those cards.
That's the right card. Okay, we have to have an election, and it is truly a bittersweet event because, we had such an incredible future leader of this organization in Rhonda King, somebody who never failed to come and let you know when you needed to straighten out and buck up, and who always was here for this organization. And it's a real tough thing to have to choose a replacement. But I'll tell you one thing. Rhonda would want us to go on and only do a better job because she truly loved this organization. So whoever does fill her spot truly has a real honor bestowed on him or her to take that position. Okay, I will now open nominations for the office of Second Vice President.
Mr. President?
And let me just say, Second Vice President, the winner of this race will be up for nomination in the nominating committee because the office of Second Vice President is one of those that is whose term will end at the end of the year. So they'll be serving out the end of the expired term and subject to election. Okay.
Mr. President?
Yes.
I would like to nominate for the office of Second Vice President Donna Pomerantz.
Okay. Donna Pomerantz's name has been placed in nomination. Are there any other nominations? Excuse me. Are there any other nominations? Yes. Okay, Lee Morton has declined. That's the third time. Are
Mr.
there any
President,
other?
Not,
yes.
I move that Donna Pomerantz be put into this office by.
Let me say it one final time, just to be, do the parliamentary.
You did three.
No, let's make that motion, Kathy. Are there any other nominations? Okay, Kathy, now.
I move that nominations be closed and that Donna Pomerantz be elected by acclamation.
All right. I think the ayes have it. Okay. Don, do you want to get to a mic? I have to.
I'm speechless. I want to thank everybody, and I know that as Jeff said, it's bittersweet because Rhonda was supposed to be here to finish this, and I just want to thank you all, and I want you to know that I'm here for anything, whether it's whether you have something difficult to talk about or a concern or something positive. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Donna. Okay, now, because Donna's will be assuming immediately the office of second vice president, her seat on the board is vacated, and therefore that seat is now up for election. Now, again, that seat will only, that person who is selected will only be serving out the end of this year, and that because her board seat is also one of those that will be up for nomination in the nominating committee. Okay, I now open nominations for a position on the board of directors.
Mr. President, I would like to nominate Lee Morton for that position.
Okay, we don't need a second. Lee Morton has been nominated. Anyone else? Any other nominations? Yes.
I would like to nominate Linda Perrell.
Okay, Linda Perrell has been nominated. Any other nominations? Are there any other? I heard.
I'm nominating again.
Yes.
Steve Ford.
Steve Ford's name has been placed in nomination. Okay, so we have Fort, Morton, and Perrell so far, and I heard someone else. Yes.
I would like to nominate Randy Morgan.
Okay, we have Brandy Morgan's name placed in nomination. Yes. We have Foster Brown's name placed in nomination. Okay, are there any other nominations? Okay. Okay. Dr. Jones, you're accepting? Just want to make sure. Okay. All right. So, any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Okay. I now entertain a motion. Nominations be closed.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. So, we are going to do them in alphabetical order. Foster Brown, who is going to speak for you? Lorraine Foster. Okay. All right. Steve Fort. Okay. Kathy Skivers. Okay. Martin Jones, who's going to be your speaker? You don't have to, Martin. I want to make sure. Okay. Brandy Morgan, who is your speaker? Yes, she is.
Penny.
Did you say Penny was going to be your speaker? I believe I heard.
Yes.
Okay. Penny Valdovinos will be her speaker. Okay. Lee Morton. Okay. Actually, you know, I should say to all of you, and we'll go back, you can have two speakers if you want them. Okay. So, well, I mean, it's true. That's the rule. We can't change that. It's custom. Well, that's right. You have 5 minutes. Linda Perrell. Okay. So all of you are going to stick to one speaker or not? Okay. All right. Foster Brown, your speaker will go first. And, okay, we're going to have Gabe Griffith with the stopwatch. Yes, we did.
Winifred.
Winifred.
Oh, okay. Okay, the
speakers have 5 minutes, right, Jeff?
Speakers have 5 minutes.
Do you want any kind of a warning at 1 minute?
Yes. We'll give you a warning at 1 minute.
I will announce 1 minute when you have 1 minute left.
And arrows will be shot if you go overtime.
And we'll make sure to have Ed shoot since he has the side up here.
And the president reminds you, and reminds himself, that you have to have your badges. I need to get mine.
The president may not be voting in this election.
Yes, indeed. Okay, Lorraine Foster, you are on the clock as soon as you begin.
Okay, and I'm ready with the stopwatch, so start whenever you're ready.
I would like to start by saying I met Foster Brown here at in Sacramento at a convention. I think it was about 3 years ago. He's a very ambitious young person. He has worked his way up to, he's the president of the Inland Empire chapter. He's recently received his bachelor's degree in mathematics. He also attended the leadership conference, I think it was in 04. Oh, 08, sorry. And he also attended the legislative information seminar in 08 as well. And I think that he would be a very good representative on the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Lorraine. We're now going to our second speaker, which will be Kathy Skivers for Steve Ford.
Steve Ford is currently the president of the Bayview chapter, and it's not the first time. He's been called into service many times. We have term limits. We believe in CCB that term limits are a good thing. We have reason to believe that's not always the case out of the CCB, but Steve, when he was still working, was a bender, and he knows all about getting along with meeting with people. He currently serves on the board of directors of the East Bay Center for the Blind. That's a group of blind people where the members are blind, and most of them, and the organization is controlled by the blind themselves. He has gone and visited all the chapters in our area pretty much, very few that he's missed, and he has been attending these conventions as our delegate for many, many times. He is on a commission in Alameda. He makes it his business to go out and visit our local legislators. He's a steady participant in Pete Stark's meetings when he comes to town hall. Pete Stark is a congressman in our area, and the Bayview chapter and its members are known to him. He has been on the Governmental Affairs Committee for some years, and he has served on the Fundraising Committee. He's certainly sold his share of tickets, and he is a very good person to follow through on things that he is supposed to do. Steve is a person who will call on people and see how they are. He follows up to find out how his members are, and he talks with them. He has been with the organization for some time, and I think it's important that we ask someone to serve on the board of directors that they have some experience in dealing with the very issues in which we are involved. He's done that. He's appeared at many places to speak for us. He goes to the various committees that meet for transportation and other things in the area. And I'm sorry, I'm being distracted. There's some conversations behind me.
That's right, Kathy. You got plenty of time.
In any case, I really think that Steve would be an asset to the board. He thinks carefully. He makes his own decisions. He doesn't care if, let's just say he doesn't care if I like what he does or not. We get along very, very well. But he doesn't vote the way that people want him to do. We were having a discussion, for example, on whether we should meet once a year or twice a year. He brought this to his chapter, and as he so nicely said last night, the people who never attend the conventions and probably wouldn't think that we should have one a year. The people who go all the time think we should have two a year. But anyway, he listens to his people, and it's an important thing. It's not enough to hear. You've got to be able to listen. He listens to his members. He brings us programs. We recently had a discussion from Outreach on the BART Earthquake Committee that came and talked with us and answered our questions about how blind people in our area will fare when they begin to rearrange all of every BART station on the BART system within the next 2 years for earthquake preparedness. And he brings that kind of a program to us. We asked for something like that, and we got it. He's very good at our lasagna dinners, and he has to work. A president of our organization can't just come to the dinners. They have to work, and he always does. He's been very supportive of our annual deafblind parties. He participates in that Christmas party for the deafblind and helps set those up and work on them. I'm not going to take the whole 5 minutes. I just believe that he is a dedicated person to this organization. He supports it. And every time we hit him with tickets, he doesn't say no. He buys them. And I hope you will all give him your vote.
Okay, thank you very much. Our next speaker is Chris Gray on behalf of Dr. Martin Jones.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. It is with great pride that I stand up to speak on behalf of the president, my president, of my primary chapter, although I'm a member of others, the Golden Gate chapter of CCB, Dr. Martin Jones. Dr. Jones is many things to many people. I think we know him first and foremost because of his work and his advocacy for people who are not perhaps as fortunate as some of us. And he never stops in his activities of work and support for these people. I happen to know this guy is up at 6 in the morning every day because he leaves me voicemail on my machine for what he believes we need to do in our chapter to further the work for blind and visually impaired people. On a very personal note, I'd like to say that in times when I've had difficulties, for example, when I was in the hospital for several weeks in 2003, Dr. Jones reached out to me, called me. He didn't ask me for anything. He just called and said, "We love you, we support you, and we hope that you're doing well." That means a lot. And that's a lot of what we're about in CCB. As a leader in a chapter, Martin reaches out and brings people to our meetings, make sure we have meetings. Our last meeting is a great example of what Golden Gate is about. We had three new members come, one person who has been dealing with some serious personal issues, addiction issues and so forth, other people who Martin comes across in the course of his work and his service in the community of San Francisco. When we get together, we always have things like sandwiches or chicken or pizza, and 99 times out of 100, it is our president who brings them to create a sense of camaraderie and fellowship and caring among our chapter. And I think that extends not only to our chapter, but throughout the San Francisco Bay Area and throughout the California Council of the Blind area of our region. Dr. Jones is committed. Not only is he involved in social work types of activities, but I can tell you, as the treasurer of Golden Gate Chapter, he keeps his eye on the bottom line. We often have fundraisers. We have for a local chapter, a significant sum of money in the bank, and that is primarily due to the work of our president to bring that money forward and invest it wisely with the help of his board of directors. I certainly would never speak against any other candidate. These are all great candidates, but I hope I've given you a little sense of this man, of this dedicated leader of CCB, Dr. Martin Jones. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Okay, we will now go to Penny Valdivinos, who will speak on behalf of Brandy Morgan.
I have had the privilege of working with Brandy at the Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind. She's a great help in everything, and whenever we need anything, she's right there with all the help that we need. She is a communication major. She is a systems change director at the Independent Living Center. She's a systems change. She was the independent living specialist, but she has been promoted. Also, Brandy spearheaded when one of our own was hit and her dog killed in August. She spearheaded the protest to inform and to educate Tehachapi on how to be guide dog and friendly to all of us. She, not only with that, did the television covered everything. The television got an award, a Golden Mike Award, for the coverage. This was all due to Brandy. She's keeping us and all our needs and all our things in the forefront of the community. She's working to help and be a great advocate for us. And I think she would be a great help to the council. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Penny. Okay. We will now turn to Ann Kaiser to speak on behalf of Lee Morton.
Thank you very much, everyone. I rise to speak on behalf of a very long time, very dear friend and colleague, Lee Morton, who I've known for, well, I won't say it now, half a century, since we were both in first grade. Lee is one of the most hardworking people I've ever known for this organization. She doesn't make a lot of noise about it. She's very, she does it in a very quiet, effective way. She doesn't toot her own horn. She doesn't make a lot of fanfare about what she does, but she's truly one that I think deserves your support. I was privileged about 3 years ago to visit San Diego and go to one of their chapter meetings, and along with that guide dog user support group that they have in San Diego. And while I was there, I was just amazed. I must add, too, that Lee is the executive director of the Blind Community Center in San Diego, which is a wonderful organization. I could not believe during the weekend I was there, she was constantly on call for so many activities going on, and she was always just there for whatever was asked of her. She has been chair of the crisis committee for quite a few years now, and there's nothing, in my opinion, that deserves a greater amount of adulation than the work those people do to try to pull people in crisis out of horrible situations that they get into, mostly through no fault of their own. So there's probably a lot more I could say about Lee, but BRLC, she's been an active member there. She's been, I think she served on every board position of Guide Dog Users of California. She's president. She's been president of the San Diego chapter a couple of times now, and I think she's done everything you can think of. Lee's been there. She's done it. She's done it effectively. She's done it well. And like I say, she doesn't make a big deal out of it. She just does what needs to be done in a very efficient, effective, and caring way. So I totally hope that you rise and do the right thing and vote for Lee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Anne. And finally, we have Winifred Downing on behalf of Linda Perrell.
About 4 years ago during the summer, I received a note from somebody, I can't even remember who it was at CCB, maybe it was an email note, that there was a woman named Linda Perrell who was going to move to California, and she particularly wanted to be a member of the San Francisco chapter. Well, now you guys who are chapter presidents know that that's every president's dream, that anybody wants to be in your chapter. So she did come, and in the very first year, she was working on what was then the fund, the Good Neighbor Fund, which is the manner in which we select every year some person who needs equipment and help give that to those persons. This was very much in the beginning in those years, in that year, but Linda was on it and working hard because that committee puts in an awful lot of time. And more she participated in the chapter in every single way, got to know everybody personally, was concerned about the people who weren't able to come for some reason and all that kind of thing. And she also became very interested in CCB, came to the conventions right away, always attended every session when she was here, and pretty soon Jeff saw her and he thought, gee, she's got some unusual traits here. He sent her to Hawaii to represent the organization. And when the Western Regional Conference was established, he asked her to represent California. So Linda's had a great deal of preparation for this job. I know she will do it well, and I hope you will support her.
Thank you, Wynn, very much. Okay. Boy, you know, as a side note to this, if you take a look at the years of CCB service that our nominators, especially Kathy and Winifred, have had, this is probably unparalleled in any affiliate that you could possibly come up with. And I think that's a true credit to this organization. Let's hear a hand for Kathy and Wynn. Not to mention a few others like Chris that have been around for a few years himself. But here will be how we will do it. Listen very closely, because this is complicated, but it's a secret ballot, and I would never do away with it. if you want Foster Brown, do nothing to your ballot. Do nothing. If you want Steve Fort, tear off one corner. One corner for Fort. If you want Martin Jones, two corners. Tear off two corners. If you want Brandy Morgan, tear off three corners. You won't have to have enough corners. If you want Brandy Morgan, you're into the third corner. If you want Lee Morton, fold your ballot once. Doesn't matter which way, just fold it once. Well, we could do four corners, but that's getting pretty crazy. So I'm thinking we'll go up to three corners. And then if you want Linda Perrell, you fold it twice. No, we're going to do... Okay, here's what we're going to do. Once we do it, we don't want to deviate because we will get too confusing. Nothing for Foster Brown. One corner for Steve Fort. Two corners for Martin Jones. Three corners for Brandy Morgan. You fold it once. No corner tearing off for the last two people. You fold it once. Doesn't matter which way. For Lee Morton. And you fold it twice for Linda Perrell. All right? Everybody got that? You want me to repeat it one more time? Okay. It's so easy a school kid could do it. All right. We'll get these passed out, collected, and then we'll do the delegates' vote so we don't have too much going on at once here. This is our only election, so we are ready. Okay, ACB Capital Chapter, 8 votes. Okay, 8 votes Perel. Active Blind, Inland Valley, 5 votes. 5 votes, is it Perel? Okay, I want to make sure. 5 votes Perel. Quiet, because we need to do this right, guys. Oh, and I should add one thing before we go on. I meant to say it sooner. According to the parliamentarian, the result will be that the top, assuming no one gets a majority, the top 3 will end up in the next round. It's kind of like an American Idol thing, I guess. Okay, now, Alameda County, 5 votes. 5 votes, Steve Fort. Association for Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes. Okay, 3 votes, Jones. 2 votes, Brown. And Peter, if you don't get anything, please stop me.
Sure,
and
I will.
Okay. Bayview chapter, 10 votes.
Bayview chapter, 10 votes for Steve Fort.
10 votes Okay, Blind Students of California, 5 votes. Okay, 2.5 Brown, 2.5 Morgan. Prayer Revival League, 5 votes. Braille Revival League. Three votes for Fort, 2 votes Perel. Okay, CCCLV, 5 votes.
1 vote Steve Fort, 4 votes Linda Perel.
1 vote Fort, 4 votes Perel. Library Users, excuse me, I'm sorry, of America, 5 votes.
Library Users, 3 votes for Morton,
2
votes for Morgan.
3 for Morton, 2 for Morgan. Morgan, yeah. Central Coast Low Vision Council, 5 votes. Foster Brown. Compton Chapter, 11 votes. 5.5 Brown. I'm sorry. And 5.5 Jones. East Los Angeles chapter. 7 votes. Linda Perel. 7 votes Perel. Glendale Burbank chapter. 7 votes.
4 votes Perel.
3 votes Brown. Golden Gate chapter, 5 votes.
5 Jones.
No hesitancy there. Greater Bakersfield, 5 votes. 5 votes Morgan. Greater Los Angeles chapter, 5 votes.
3 Perel, 1 Brown.
3 Perel, 1 Brown, and 1 Morton. Greater San Joaquin, 5 votes. I'm sorry, repeat that. 3 Fort, 2 Morgan. Now, I should have said Greater San Joaquin, home of the Diamond Jubilee Convention, but I didn't say that. We'll say that next time. 3 Fort, 2 Morgan. Guide Dog Users, 5 votes. 5 Morton. Humboldt Chapter, 5 votes. No Humboldt Chapter. Guess we have a fog. Oh. Inland Empire, 7 votes. No, sorry, 6 votes. 6 votes, Brown. Orange County, 5 votes.
4 Perel, 1 Fort.
4 Perel, 1 Fort. Orientation Center for the Blind, 5 votes.
5 votes, Fort.
5 votes, Fort. Pyramid Chapter, 5 votes. Pyramid Chapter. Okay, no Pyramid Chapter. Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California, 5 votes. Okay, that was 2.5 Brown, 2.5 Morgan, correct? Okay, 2.5 Brown, 2.5 Morgan. Redwood Empire, 9 votes.
9 votes Perel.
San Diego Braille Club, 5 votes.
5 votes Brown.
5 votes Brown. San Diego Chapter, 6 votes.
6 votes Lee Morton.
6 votes Morton. San Francisco, 6 votes.
6 votes Braille.
6 votes Braille. San Gabriel Valley, 9 votes.
Seven votes for Rel,
Okay, that's 7 Perel, 1 Brown, 1 Fort. San Mateo County, 10 votes.
10 votes Perel.
10 votes Perel. Silicon Valley, 14 votes. The big dog, Silicon Valley. 7 Morton, 7 Perel, correct? Solano County, 5 votes Fort. And that concludes the delegate votes, so we will await the tally. Wait a minute, there's a call for something from the left corner, my right corner. What was that? Oh, somehow your Gateway's card is missing. Yeah. No, they don't, but their card is missing. I'm sorry, Gateway. 5 votes, correct? Yes.
3 votes, Dr. Jones, 2 votes, Morgan.
3 votes, Jones, 2 votes, Morgan. And I apologize again, Margaret.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Joe O'Connell, if the Humboldt County delegate is not here, may I cast a vote?
You're the alternate.
Five votes,
Fort. Okay. The roll of the states has been called, as they'd say at the convention.
Can I have your attention? I've got the results. Brown, 45.5. Fort, 57. Jones, 28.5. Morgan, 26. Morton, 39. Perel, 112.
Okay, so the top three are Fort, Brown, and Perel, correct?
No.
Give me that again. Who are the top three, Peter? Perel is one. Fort is second. That's what I said. And Brown.
Third.
That's what I said.
Fort and Brown.
No, it's not. According to the... No one had a majority vote.
Nobody had a majority.
Not even close. Okay, so now we need new ballots passed out. And this time, first I want to thank the other three candidates. Let's hear it for them. We had really excellent candidates, as was pointed out by Chris and others, and these three were very good. Okay. Sorry? Okay. All right, so I'm going to tell you what we're going to do this time. This time we will stick to corners.
Mr. President, can we get order?
Shh. Yeah, let's have some order, people. We're going to stick to corners. Foster Brown will leave the ballot alone for Foster Brown, just like we did last time. We'll do one corner for
Fort.
Steve Fort, and we'll do two corners for Linda Perel.
Nothing.
They're being passed out. They're being passed out. So, again, it's nothing for Foster Brown. Leave your ballot pristine. One corner for Steve and two corners for Linda. Simple as apple pie.
Yep.
Okay. We are ready for the delegate vote.
Yeah.
Capital Chapter 8 votes. Joni. Capital Chapter. Thank you. Okay. 8 for Perel. Inland Valley, 5 votes.
5 for Perel.
5 Perel. Alameda, 5 votes. 5 Fort. A Association of Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes.
5 votes for Foster Brown.
5 votes Brown. Bayview, 10 votes.
10 votes for Steve Fort.
10 votes for Fort. Blind students, 5 votes.
5 votes Brown.
5 for Brown. Braille Revival League, 5 votes.
2.5 for Fort, 2.5 for Perel.
2.5 for Perel. CCCLV, 5 votes.
I can't count. Wait a minute.
Okay. One for Brown. Wait a minute. That's right. One for Brown and two for Perel, two for Ford. Okay. Library users, 5 votes. I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Jerry?
5 votes.
5 Perel. Central Coast, 5 votes. 5 votes Brown. Compton, 11 votes. 11 votes Brown. East Los Angeles, 7 votes. Perel.
What? Can you repeat that, Jeff?
7 votes Perel from East Los Angeles. Are we okay, Peter?
Yes.
Okay. Glendale Burbank, 7 votes.
4 Perel, 3 Brown.
4 Perel, 3 Brown. Golden Gate, 5 votes.
2.5 Fort, 2.5 Brown.
Bakersfield, 5 votes.
5 votes
Brown. Los Angeles, 5 votes.
4 Perel, 1 Brown.
4 Perel, 1 Brown. San Joaquin, 5 votes.
5 Perel.
You skipped Humboldt. No, I'm on guide dog, so I didn't skip Humboldt. Sorry. But you had me thinking of there, Bernice. Shows the president is very gullible. Guide dog users, 5 votes.
5 Perel.
Humboldt, 5 votes.
5 votes,
Fort. Inland Empire, 6 votes. 6 votes, Brown. Orange County, 5 votes.
4 Perel, 1 Fort.
Orientation Center, 5 votes.
5 Fort.
Pyramid, 5 votes. Randolph Shepherd, 5 votes. Okay, was that 5 Brown? Okay, 5 Brown. Redwood Empire, 9 votes. 9 Perel. San Diego, 5 votes. San Diego Braille Club, sorry. 5 votes.
5 votes Brown.
San Diego Chapter, 6 votes.
Perel.
6 votes Perel. San Francisco, 6 votes.
6 votes Perel.
San Gabriel Valley, 9 votes.
7 Perel, 1 Brown, 1 Fort.
7 Perel, 1 Brown, 1 Fort. San Mateo, 10 votes.
10 votes Perel.
10 Perel. Silicon Valley, 14 votes.
14 votes Perel.
14 Perel. Solano County, 5 votes. 5 Fort, and this time I did not forget, Yosemite Gateway, 5 votes.
Gateway, 5 Perel.
5 Perel. That concludes the voting. Humboldt, we got you. No, we did it all. I want to make an introduction that I failed to make, actually, seriously for a minute. I have failed to introduce, she's been with us several times now, and I'm going to introduce her assistant in a minute, but I want to introduce, and it's so good to have her back. I always love seeing her and the work that she does for us. Teresa Santiago, on our audio staff. Okay, and now, being half Russian myself, I'm really happy we have him here today. Her assistant that is learning the ropes with us, and he's got a lot of experience in the area beforehand, so we're lucky to have him. Originally from Russia, Ravil Kaimov, correct? Kaimov. Okay, Ravil, welcome. Thank you very much for being here. How many of you are going to be in Fresno in October? Yeah? We're already at work. We want your ideas. We're going to I'm thrilled to say that Greater San Joaquin Chapter, Tom, Mary Beth, that whole crew, they already have a host committee that are working. You know, what they're going to do, as soon as you get to the city limits of Fresno, they're kicking you right back out. Unless, there isn't one unless. Unless you swear allegiance to the Fresno State Bulldogs, and then they'll let you in. October 29th, I believe, through the 1st.
Okay.
Peter, you're on.
I've got the results. Foster Brown, 82.5. 60 votes for Fort. Perel, 174.5 votes.
Okay.
Basically, Perel's got the majority.
Okay, we want to congratulate both Foster and Steve. Excellent candidates they both are. Congratulations to both of them. And congratulations to our winner, Ms. Burrell.
I want to thank everyone who voted for me initially and continued to vote for me. And I want to thank everyone who voted for me as time went on. I really, really appreciate this group a great deal. I've only been here a few years, but I'm very, very willing to work extremely hard for CCB. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Okay, we'll put it to work. All right, that concludes the session for the evening. Are there any announcements before we adjourn? Hearing none, we're adjourned until tomorrow afternoon. Enjoy your evening.